Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about... An Introduction to Physics Reloaded. Now, might call me mad, but I decided that... I'll give several levels of explanation. I decided that I would explain or read, podcast an entire physics book end to end, the very best physics book that I could lay my hands on, which I really liked. There were elements missing. There's elements that I had researched or learnt about in education later on. As you slow down and describe things, you realise that get a new view on the structure of things, but it had a beautiful history to it. It really went back far deeper, in far deeper history than most people who, I suppose, get their physics from what's taught from the diluted version of physics. This is Heck's book, simply titled Physics, published, the one I've got is published in 1994. So it's sort of... probably spoke to the peak of the way I was educated, and of course things have changed since then. But as I began to read, it was taking me about an hour to read half a chapter, just to physically read half a chapter. And going through it, you'd want to stop and say, look, there are other aspects to it, other aspects that I do understand. And the general idea is that I'm doing cardiac rehab. I'm going to be able to eventually, after reading this, taking the knowledge, the various steps of taking knowledge, remembering it, ordering it, and being able to communicate it as a podcast off the top of your head, this lofty goal, I've got to get there. And so as I've looked at that and thought deeply about it, I've said, oh, look, I have to actually cut this and actually give it to you straight, this simple version of podcasting. And so I'm going to try just to data dump, having read Heck's text, and trying to give you the basics of it up front. First off, we've got to say what's the area we're looking at, and that's physics. And physics is an area of natural science, the natural sciences, which describe the observed world. So we're going to go back to what the observed world is, but that's an important point. We're going to look at physics, and that is basically describing the fundamental particles of matter and matter itself, and how matter accumulates into bigger and larger things, from small rocks to large rocks, as planets to suns. Looking at things, physical concepts like temperature and various things like that. A subset of physics, in fact, or a sub-component of physics itself, is chemistry, and that deals with the particular complex nature of 100 or so naturally occurring elements, and they occur at a certain temperature that we're used to in life, and we tend to discuss the chemistry, how this comes together. So that's a subset of physics, and a subset of chemistry really is biology. So biology is basically living chemical reaction engines, and that's just one strip through natural sciences, and you can get into even deeper sciences like the brain. And so that's one aspect, and then sitting on top of all of it, but sort of parallel to it, is mathematics. And there's a fundamental difference between mathematics and natural sciences, and that's in the very material that it uses. So mathematics deals with numbers, so that some numbers can be exact, rational numbers. They tend to be exact or finished, or they can be irrational and never finish, but they deal with numbers which are unknown, whereas physical sciences deal with the two numbers which are different in two different ways. One is, and it's going to be a link to it at the end, one is the fact that those numbers are measurements, and as measurements, they're inexact. And physics numbers always tend to have a decimal point, which refers at a certain number of digits associated with the digital decimal point, which refers to the precision with which that measurement is made. So 1.0 actually means 0.95 to 1.05 within there. And there's this limit, this precision of actual science numbers. Science numbers always have this variation. So that's one aspect where the science numbers or physics numbers vary from mathematics. So they have a subset of it. Then there's, we could keep on going about the actual accuracy with which you know things and how you manipulate science numbers together such that you basically don't wind up with something more accurate or more, you get a false impression of how fine that you know something. So often you'll get a number in your calculator and that will be to a, you know, a 1,000 billionth precision, but in fact you'll only know it till 1%. So there's a methodology in science, in physics, dealing with measurements and dealing with measurement numbers. So physics and science use a subset of maths, and the numbers we use are observation numbers. They're not exact exact numbers, so there's uncertainty with it. But there's another thing. Maths deals with counting numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, and they're abstract, whereas physics, the actual numbers are compound numbers. And I really mean this absolutely seriously. So there's 1, 2, 3 kilograms, 1, 2, 3 meters. The actual number is a composite number, always a composite number. You may have factors inside it, scaling factors inside it, but that it's a number which is a composite number, and it contains a unit with it, which is the unit of measure. So in physics, there's, well, you can have a certain number of atoms, but if they have a measurement which is a weight, so you can have enumerate something, occasionally you can do, but the vast majority of things are 240 volts, 50 hertz, 340 meters, 340.03 meters per second. They all have their units associated with it. So not only, take it, physics is built using, is describes the world, and it describes it using a subset of numbers which are increasingly specialized numbers. And this is an important thing to, sort of, suppose, get across at the point, first point of view. And it, of course, this is not, this is different from a textbook, which is meant to be handed to a student, and it doesn't overwhelm them. They can pick it up at certain levels. This is more a podcast. This is getting down to the basics of it. Now, beyond that, those natural numbers can become more and more complex, and they can be natural numbers. They can go up to a natural number with a direction, and even go up to tensors, with which refer to surfaces and all these more complex mathematical things. But they're still a measurement, and they're still, if you've got units, but they can become more complex than those numbers. So that's the really fundamental aspect, in that the natural sciences involve observations, and observations involve uncertainty, and observations of the amount, but of a particular quality, and so it's or property. So a observation involves a number, an error, and a property. That all goes into what makes it up. And then we have to really get into the broader question of what are the sort of the domains of observation? How do they structure together? And the entire thing about physics and the natural world is that observations tend to form a predictable pattern. We'll just step back a little bit more to before we go into pattern and observations and patterns. We want to step another step forward. So we've got maths, which are numbers, science, the observations are in sort of these compound numbers, the scale, the uncertainty, scale number, a numerative number, an uncertainty in that, and an amount, and then beyond that there can be even more complexities, to it. But that's not sufficient. That is, in fact, a measurement. But we have to convert a measurement itself, it's just a measurement, to actually make it up to the grade where we can actually use it in science, we have to convert it into something called data. And data is a measurement at a time, place, object. It's got all these constraints which actually tell you where the data goes into it. So it can be actually two ways or multiple ways. So you can have a sentence, a verbal description of it. You can have it in a table. That's where the actual positioning of the number is given meaning by its position within a table, the columns and rows of a table to go through, and these can be multi-dimensional tables. Or, most importantly, we can use a science of subscripts, and this is almost teeth-pulling to see this is not taught, but it's a fundamental thing. So for a subscript, they generally follow the key of what's flown into computer language is object-oriented language. It's a concept-oriented, object-oriented. So you will say, for a particular object, it has a velocity of this, blah, 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 goes through. So just an example, if I start off walking at a particular speed at 10 o'clock, and this is, so, velocity, podcaster, 10 o'clock is 10 metres per second, for instance. It's the actual, you've got the information, but you're converting it to data by tagging it to an object and an information, and that verbal description can be converted into a sentence via subscript. So typically the most typical subscripts might be velocity of body one, initial south. You can just keep on doing it. And it reads as you go down the subscripts as adjectives to your initial body. Now let's just even stop here to have a little review. Let's look at another level. So science is a social function that's been created by humanity, and it's a process, and what happens is that we feed into it observations, and out of it goes, I suppose, intelligent conclusions or significance of it. So those observations gain significance by the process of science, the social science, and as such, it's got a lot of it's very embedded into our society, and it takes abstract tools, forges them together with experience to produce significance or findings. So take it at its most severe, you can actually go into a crime scene and take forensic evidence, and that evidence is observations. Those observations get a quantity, a unit associated with it, uncertainty associated with it, and then that observation gets converted into information that it was picked at such and such a point, and that goes through, this is the suspect's time and such and such a date. All that sub-information goes to make it data, and that data then goes into a science to produce some sort of significance. Now, that's what actually does happen in science at the most basic level, and you have to ask yourself a question. Why? Well, that's really not explained very much to kids when they first come into what science is. Now, I think the historic reason for it is that we've been used to scientists who have gotten the actual structure of science, teaching, explaining science to people, and it's sort of lost its basic terms here. And there's a whole lot of other processes that go in that science black box. You know, the data goes in, science happens, and significance comes out the other side. And that significance can be really important. That significance can determine what medication you have, determine if you have an operation, or if it determines that someone is guilty, that significance is taken. It's a significance, acknowledged societal significance. So it's something that is sort of like a currency, an intellectual currency, which goes on. So there's certain different levels of currencies. There's actual physical money. There's the Facebook social peer currency, that if you dress up incorrectly or do the wrong things, you'll be rejected. But there's another, I suppose, accounting mechanism. And sort of like being financially literate, knowing what money goes and what currency will be accepted in what situations. So there's a similar one to know about how information becomes data, and that it requires these components. So we will sort of teach, I suppose, in art, we'll teach, you'll teach the basics of paint strokes and colours, but putting it all together into a picture which has significance is a different thing, which happens in science. And so we have this fundamental thing about how you introduce the importance of observations and significance. And the way that I've done it, and teaching a lot of things about observations and inferences and significance and explanations, is by having kids very early on in the introduction to science bring in and do magic tricks. And so with the magic tricks, the idea is to observe something, and then you create an inference, or you create a false inference, and people believe it's magic. That's been the fundamental aspect of the march of science. March of science has actually changed the boundary of what we consider to be magic, our explanation of the world. You also need this really basic stuff in science before you can actually. You have to really deal with this data and significance link before you can move on to the other bigger, broader aspects of science to say what we're discussing and why we're doing various things. So obviously you have to, as in financial or social stuff, you've got to gradually create a path where you have literacy increase. That's what we're going to be aiming to do. That's sort of a similar explanation to this fantastic textbook, but it's sort of left out some things, or I believe the textbook's jumped around a little bit. So we have to actually start to talk. We've basically got the basics that science and physics as observations, observable world. Then we have to sort of start to look at the structure of something called, I suppose I'll start off, rather than load your memory up with the different varieties of it, the first thing I'd like to talk about is the law. Now, law is a different in social things. This is we conform to a law, a law is something that we believe nature conforms to. It's a descriptive thing. So, similarly, a law, you will not speed. You fit down a highway. You see. You don't ask why or anything. It's accepted. That's the description of a state of being, that you won't go beyond it. You can't break. You will go within a certain speed limit. So things not going faster than the speed of light is a particular speed limit. That's a postulate. That's one example of a given law. But laws are more descriptions. Newton's law of gravity, which describes the apparent weight you feel on the Earth's surface as compared to the Moon, as compared to, say, Mars, for instance, you'll feel different weights. That's described by Newton's law of gravity. Is more descriptive things. All the first and second laws of thermodynamics, that heat travels from a hot body to a cold body, or entropy always increases. They're laws, but they're not explanations. So that's what a law is, and that's one of the strange things, in that people often spend a lot of time teaching a law as if it's a theory, and that's a major thing. Or similarly, as I've talked a bit earlier, using scientific terms, that is, the scientific terms with the amount, the error, the unit, and the context. That's, you need those four aspects to get a scientific term. We have a natural way of writing that in a very efficient form called equations. The important thing is that Newton, at the very birth of school physics, had no equations. So he had a verbal way of saying something, and we, in the next 10 years, 30 years after Newton, converted that to this numerical way of writing it. And a lot of teaching Newton is people just go over, this is the basic laws of physics, those fundamental laws of physics. People go over that historical step from the verbal written things. So Newton said this, and we write that as equations, and that's for them very much a derivation of Newton. That's how their teachers did it and how they were taught, but really it doesn't get us any deeper into it. And of course, it's unsurprising that when you launch into that, you can lose some of the more fundamental aspects of it. So Newton, very much laws, and in fact that's what he was believing physics and science was going to be. God had ordained something, and he was discovering the law, the description of what God did. So I would be pushed towards the centre of the earth by the law of God, and so it would actually be God pushing me down to the earth. The actual origin of the force was really an act of God. We were discovering God's beauty and nature. Of course, now we understand a bit more. Things have happened since then, but school teaching doesn't advance since then. So with the Higgs boson and the hypercharge on fundamental particles and a bit of E equals MC squared, we've got a handle on to what causes mass and what causes things. So Einstein came up, and he didn't, he moved to a theory, So a theory is an is a body of explanations. The idea is that you can't prove or disprove a theory. You can only make it better at explaining things, or it's got a quality about it. So the theory of evolution is an explanation of evolution. Theories of cells is an explanation. Solid state theory is an explanation of things. So theories are there. So we've got, and this is just a very brief introduction, we've got the what science is for as a body of body of explanation, social body of explanation, that it converts observations through the application of science to significance, and in order to do that, the data going into it has to have these four aspects: the scale, the error, the unit, and the context have to go into it. Now, I say this in a rather strange thing. It's sort of tweaking me at the moment, even though I'm saying this as my understanding, that understanding is not, I have not read that. I've just put that together through a whole series of studying computer science, writing up computer programs, analysing things that are going, reading textbooks and saying, oh, well, this explanation is not full. And people will say part of the story a bit later on. So I'm really bringing it together. Now I'm bringing it to the landscape of law theory. There's another thing. So a theory is a universal explanation. A law is a set of observations given by society in general, accepted by society in general. That's a description. But there's also a much more private thing, which is a hypothesis, which is a predicted observation, a prediction. Now, the hypothesis, the prediction, is either proved to be correct or incorrect, and if the prediction is the basis of if the prediction is based on your belief structures of your theory that you use, if it's incorrect, if your theory, if your prediction is not correct or not valid, or not valid, that's the word we have to go into a bit later. If the prediction is not found to be true, you have to revisit your theory. Your theory is a non-working theory. So hypothesis is a much more personal thing. It's a hypothesis that you will take as your interaction with both laws and theories. So it's your gambit of interaction. But more importantly, from an education standpoint, an observation, a hypothesis should be a prediction without a theory, stated without the theory, you may actually fall into the trap, and people often fall into the trap if they want to actually move through it. They teach a theory, they or teach a branch of science, do a certain experiment, which is to observe it, to experience it through different media, but then they want to say, oh, well, look, let's go through the scientific method, which is really not the scientific method, and they propose a hypothesis and actually ask for the explanation of it. So I hypothesize that the kettle will boil because the temperature of the it's been plugged in, and the temperature has risen, and it's been plugged in, and then what happens is you do this experiment, you plug it in, and then you say, well, now I have found out that the temperature of things increase if I plug things in. Now, what may indeed happen is maybe a different explanation, which is also produces coincidentally the correct result, and it just leads to very, very poor quality science. And the problem is that if you do that and you teach it and you've taught it, you can't, it's like this envelope, you can't break through it. So we've moved on from observation and convert observations to significance. And I think that's actually a powerful way of expressing it. And we've talked about what those observations must be, how they must obey the law of maths within themselves, but they have these other components. And we've talked about the actual broad landscape of theories, laws, and hypotheses. But there is another thing which sort of really struck me, which really said, oh, look, I had to stop and actually give a revision podcast on this, and that's models. What is a model? So there's actually a physical model. I can build a car, a small toy car, or there's an abstract model. I can actually, which is sort of in between. So the physical model car has a whole lot of abstractions built into it. That door on your little car, which may actually be just drawn, is part of the abstract model. It's sort of a physical model, which is an abstract, the story of the abstract information. So a model stores, so I can describe a car to you, and I'm giving you a model of a car, or I could give you a picture of a car. It's anything which communicates things in a scientific way. And I have to sort of step back to, or sort of go back in a limit, or let's go for the models. We've got abstract, concrete, and mathematical model. And they're all, people sort of make a distinction between them, but they're all sort of linked in a certain way. But the actual thing I want to add to that, won't go very much beyond this, is that there's certain conventions that we have in terms of how we present models, and so the model is an embodiment of the human conception of a problem, a theory, and a law as our way of communicating and talking it. So the moment we actually grab the abstract stuff and actually do it as a communication process, we can put it out and we can actually standardize models. So there's a standardization of models, of the way we present models. So there's levels of standardizations. We have a standardization of how you graph things, how you write things, how you put equations. So the graph has the variable that you change in the variable on the horizontal axis and the variable that responds on the vertical axis. That's one thing. The way the symbols that we use is a convention. There's all these conventions associated with models. So a model is your declaration of convention. But there's other conventions as well in terms of observations and restricted words. So we have the general word for how big something is. Now that's big, that's huge, but we have restricted words which have specific scientific meaning. So various people may think a football field is big, or a walk is a long walk, but something's, a ball is big or small depending on whether you're a toddler or a grown man. However, that gets removed if you use the word the volume of it. That's, everyone will agree about a volume, or the diameter of something like that. And so I'm just getting a little bit puffed going out here. So this really links to the idea of conventions all the way go through it, and the idea that the conventions go in the way units that you use. We have a conventional units, or we have conventional ways of setting things out, we have sort of agreed models that we use. So a model is a conventional way of saying it. So you're allowed to actually produce any model that you want, but the model itself has to be will eventually correspond a certain amount to conventions. And so the more conventions you use, the less you have to describe. So say in traffic might be a conventional thing, so you may want to drive differently on the wrong side of the road, but you have to get the police out and you have to get everyone to understand that you're driving on the wrong side of the road. If you drive with conventions, you can actually produce a lot more things. So a lot of, I suppose you've got a lot of scope for the introduction to science is quite problematic to get down to, and I'll have a few goes at it a few times as I've been pushed off here. The question is that people who don't understand it think it's unnecessary and can produce very quick results with a very poor understanding. It's something that really has to be taught and gone through and thought about. And one of these things, this is why these textbooks, the well-written textbooks, is gone a massive way towards doing that. But it's, when I read it, I realise that we have to go even further. There are certain things where we teach sort of very conventional knowledge, conventional science, which has been taught generation after generation, but there appears to be other ways that we can teach and go forward. So just in summary again, science is the generation of explanations from observations. I can't believe I've bloody well said that. And in particular, natural sciences are explanations of the natural world generated from observations. That those observations, in order to be put into the scientific machinery, have to be numerical, quantifiable, but the quantities have to have uncertainties, units, contexts, and those units can actually be quite complex, from simple units to vectors to tensors. Then the broad process is of using laws, which is a sort of, the laws is something which a law exists partly because a large number of people see the same pattern. You refer to a pattern that you can see. A theory is a body of explanations. A hypothesis is an individual prediction, but should be kept away from stating the prediction with the theory, so you don't fall into the trap of believing that your hypothesis proves or can disprove a theory. But the significance requires another step. And the final aspect of this, going again, is that a model is a abstract, concrete, or mathematical collection of information that I can trade my explanations, laws, and hypotheses with. I construct a model, and that model is corresponds to my observations, or is a sort of a clearinghouse of my observations, and is a key piece of cultural machinery. So a street directory can be a model of a city. That's a collection of arrangement of data and information which explains how something works. And so it's something that you can look at and work out how the actual real city works. That's an example of a model. And just going across, this is a head-scratching thing, that this is not actually set out clearly in a textbook. And I suppose this is not where I've shot out from. I just thought, look, I'm going to read these textbooks end to end and eventually I'm aiming for the overall skill. I wasn't aiming for the actual ability to recraft a new solution. But there you have it. Thanks for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.